By about AD 1, the web of interconnectedness was really coming home to roost in Southeast Asia. The maritime networks which linked the major rivers in Southeast Asia had become part of a much larger commercial world, a commercial world where the monsoon winds dictated to a considerable degree the annual rhythm of trade. How widespread was this trade? We have a fascinating example. Indian trade pottery from South Asia has been found as far east as the island of Bali, 2,700 miles away. And with trade links like that, it is clear that there were connections between very distant lands indeed. And we know that in Han times, Chinese ships who visited Southeast Asia also regularly visited Indian ports. You see, Southeast Asia, with its low-lying, sheltered coast, was a vital link now in a chain of trading ports that linked China to India, and India to the distant Roman Emperor. You recall when we talked about later Indian civilization, we pointed out that Asoka and other Mauryan rulers described in Lecture 26, who governed their empire from the Ganges Valley, were Buddhists. They had overcome Brahmanism, which had preached isolation. Buddhism, on the other hand, preached overseas contact, trade, commercial success. And as a result of this, contacts between India and Southeast Asia accelerated rapidly. Long after Mauryan times, the impetus continued. And it accelerated in the late first millennium BC and continued. There was one inevitable result to this. The patchwork of powerful rulers and chieftains in Southeast Asia learned brand new ideas. They discovered fresh ways of looking at the world, very different from the traditional ancestor worship of their forefathers. In time, they became familiar with the Brahman and particularly the Buddhist concepts of divine kingship. As we've said several times in this course, divine kingship is a vital component in many, many pre-industrial states. It was very important to the pharaohs, for example. It's extremely important to the Maya. But no states ever carried it to such an extreme extent as did the Khmer states of Southeast Asia in the second millennium AD. Divine kingship revolutionized, and that word's not too strong, social and political organization in Southeast Asia. They developed a society where everything depended on the divine lord at the center of the state, whose diplomatic and military abilities were all important. These really were states where ability of one man was all important, simply because that person had so much power. There's a term that many experts apply to early Southeast Asian states. They call them mandalas, circles. Circles, which I mentioned before, like with the Shang, like concertinas, which expanded and contracted as different kingdoms interacted with one another. But the key element here was the spiritual and personal qualities of each ruler, because these qualities, in large part, defined the fate of his kingdom.